Hello and welcome to another interview in the series Coffee with Craig. Anna is one of those special people who's so easy to talk to. These interviews are supposed to be about 20 minutes long, but Anna and I chatted for about 40 minutes and I completely lost track of time. I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to the full unedited version here. Remember, you can see the edited video version of this interview and many more interviews on our Mansion Inglés YouTube channel and on our website at mansioninglés.com and also on our podcast website at inglespodcast.com.
So,
right.
How long have we known each other? Because I remember first meeting you when we did an FCE speaking test, because there was a student who was special needs, and I stepped in, and that's the first time I met you.
Yeah, she was partially sighted.
That's right.
Yeah.
So when did you start working here?
Well, actually in the British Council about 3.5 years ago, but I've been in Spain now for 4 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what was your childhood like? Where did you grow up?
Oof, that's a difficult question. Because we moved around quite a lot because of my dad's job. I would say all around the north of England, but I was born in Whitehaven, which is near the Lake District, kind of Carlisle.
That's a beautiful area.
Yeah, it's really nice. I don't know much about it because we moved almost within 6 months of me being born, and I've never revisited Whitehaven.
So where did you really grow up?
So my childhood was in Leeds, okay, which is obviously in the north of England. And I lived in Leeds until I was 10. Mm-hmm. And then at the age of 10, then we moved to Liverpool. And so I stayed in Liverpool until I was 18. And then I left and I went to university in Newcastle.
Okay, so what was it like growing up in Liverpool? Because your teenage years
were
in Liverpool.
Yeah.
Was it a fun place to be?
Yeah, I think when we moved to Liverpool, it was a very bad time for the city because it was post-Thatcher. There was a lot of unemployment. The city was quite depressed. So I remember quite distinctly my mother saying, I don't want to move to Liverpool. It's a dump.
And it was your dad's job that
it was my dad's job. So, but anyway, I have to say that the city is now unrecognisable. And even if it was having hard times in the very early days when we were there, it was always a fun place to be because it has a big culture of music. The people, even in times of trouble, have a very, very naughty and quite funny sense of humour.
Well, the Liverpudlians are famous for their sense of humour.
Yeah, I mean, in any crisis, the first thing they do is to make a joke. And that's the way they are because it's got such a big influence, I think, from Ireland. So the combination of music, crack in the sense of having a good time is very, very strong.
So did you grow up in the centre of the city?
No,
the suburbs?
No. I grew up in a suburb of Liverpool, which people from Liverpool would say is posh.
Trees.
Exactly. So that means, that it has trees, that it's near the seaside, because it's famous actually for the Anthony Gormley statues, the Iron Men. But it's very well connected to the city, so you can be in the centre of Liverpool in 15 minutes by train. So, I mean, most people would be commuting to work, and so certainly in jobs that I had, it was very easy to get into Liverpool.
And what did you study at Newcastle?
At Newcastle, I studied English literature because that was always my passion and always what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a writer.
And when you left university, did you go straight into teaching?
Yeah, I did actually, because in my second year at university, I got a job as an au pair in Venice. And when
really?
I was in Venice, I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do. I just assumed that I would be a teacher because I was studying literature, because I come from a family of teachers, but I didn't. Really, I had never considered the idea of TEFL. And when I was in Venice, somebody mentioned it to me, and also because I was enjoying so much being abroad, I jumped at the chance to do that because it seemed like, okay, I don't want to teach literature to disaffected teenagers who don't like Shakespeare, But living abroad and teaching language, because as I say, I've always liked writing, and language itself seemed like a compromise.
Did you have ambitions to be a writer? That's a theme that runs through many teachers past, that they write creatively in their spare time. Was that something you considered when you were at university? Writing full-time?
No, I think I probably realised, I suppose it was kind of a naive thing that I thought that I could do. To be honest, I still think I could if I had the time, but I don't have very much time. But my mother always encouraged us from being very, very young to write diaries. So I wrote diaries from being about 5 years old.
So you still got them?
Yes.
So you could publish them?
So I have a collection of diaries that dates back to being five. I don't write them anymore, but it was I think it fostered a feeling of enjoying writing, which is something I'm interested in now with my students, in doing something on diaries and learner diaries, because I think the more you read and the more you write, doesn't matter what you write, the better you become.
Absolutely.
And the less of a block you have about writing.
Okay, so did you speak Italian when you went to Venice?
No, not a word. It was very funny because the family were friends of a friend, the Italian family, and I said, okay, does the little girl, who was seven, does she have enough English for us to communicate? And they said, oh yes, don't worry, she's going to be, yes. But when I arrived, she could just about say hello, goodbye. That was about it. So it was a real, it was quite difficult.
And how long were you there?
3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. Because I actually left university a little bit early that term to go to do this job. And I mean, it was an incredible experience. It was actually quite difficult, having finished it, to go back to Newcastle. Mm-hmm. Venice to Newcastle. Wasn't really kind of very glamorous.
No, the other way around is fine, but Venice to Newcastle.
It was kind of quite a big come down.
So what happened when you went back to after the Venice period? What happened then?
I think initially I probably felt quite depressed because I was going into my third year, my final year. I had a lot of assignments to do at university. In the back of my head I was thinking, I've had such a good time, why should I finish this? But I mean, there was never, I think, seriously, I knew that I had to finish university. So it was never a serious consideration to drop out, even if the experience of being there had been very exciting. I knew I had to finish it. But the other part of it was that I felt, okay, now I know what I want to do. Because I think before that, I was thinking, what am I going to do when I finish doing my degree?
You're lucky really that you found that early on. I mean, it took me years to find teaching.
I was very lucky that somebody, when I was there, I mean, it was really a turning point, because otherwise I think I probably would have ended up teaching literature. And probably, I don't know how happy I would have been with that, because I don't really like teaching teenagers, and I don't think that I have the personality to, I don't know, I think I'm too soft as a person. You have to be very strict.
So can you talk a bit about what happened when you finally left university between then and actually coming to Spain? How were those years?
Well, as I said, as soon as I finished, then I pretty much did the course to do the TEFL course to be an English language teacher. Mm-hmm. And I was very lucky because I did it part-time, and I actually got funding, so I didn't have to pay for the course. Because I was living in Liverpool, I returned to my parents. I turned up with a cheque to pay for the course, and they
Fantastic.
Said, we can find a way around this. Very typical Liverpool kind of, like, let's abuse the system. Because in theory, you had to have been unemployed for 6 months. I'd been unemployed for a month. And they said, no, we can get this sorted.
That happens in London too, by the way.
Yeah. So it was a good result, because otherwise it would have cost me, I don't know, certainly not as much as it costs today, but probably at least £700, or I don't know.
That was the price when I did it, more or less, £700.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. So I did the course. I did it in Liverpool. It was a really interesting experience, because at the time there were a lot of refugees from Somalia. So a lot of the people that I were teaching, it was more an ESOL setting. Mm-hmm. And very interesting, because there were literacy problems. Some people had never actually, been educated formally. So it was quite a different kind of teaching to what I do today, but lovely students. Mm-hmm. And I, although I was very, very, I would say on the course, I was terrified. I was actually very shy. I found the whole thing of teaching absolutely at first.
Do you remember the first time you stood up in front of a class?
Oh my God.
It's probably what, 10 minutes?
I remember speaking to my mum before going and saying, I can't do this.
It's nerve-wracking, isn't it?
I really can't do this. And I could feel myself shaking. I didn't want to hold the paper because I could feel myself shaking. And actually there were very confident people on the course. I remember feeling quite intimidated by other people who were quite loud and seemed quite gregarious and quite... And I was probably the quietest one in the group. But I soon realised that actually once I got into the classroom, the connection with the students, that I could do it. And I got an A on the course. I wasn't expecting to do that, but I really connected well with the students. And I think probably some of the louder people were thinking, she doesn't say anything, but what's she doing in the classroom? Because I did genuinely really enjoy it. And so then I finished the course and I suddenly thought, oh, I need to get a job. But it was a very bad time to get a job because it was December, because I did it part-time. And so it wasn't automatically into the start of term. But I had a friend who was in Catalonia and a teacher had dropped out because it was in Reus near Tarragona. And it was a bit of a dead-end town in a lot of ways. So the person who had gone had basically got fed up and didn't come back after Christmas. So literally, with almost a week's turnaround, I got a phone call, can you come and work? And I had about a week to organise myself to go.
So your first teaching job outside the UK was
in Spain.
Apart from Venice, was in Spain.
Yeah. So I spent about a good 6 months there, I'd say, finding my feet. It was a really quite rubbish language academy, but I always think that's quite a good thing because you can find your feet. You can make your mistakes. Nobody's looking over your shoulder.
Mine was Berlitz, you can imagine.
So, I think it's a good way to start. Absolutely. I think to start in the British Council is quite scary and quite intimidating. And I think if you're a new teacher, it makes a lot of sense to work somewhere that's a bit more relaxed and, you know, maybe less pressured environment.
So after Catalonia, after those six months, did you go back to the UK?
Only very briefly, because then I got a job in Italy. I went back to Italy because when I was in Venice, I had an Italian boyfriend. So he was really annoyed that I'd gone to Catalonia as my first job. But I couldn't find a job in Italy. At that time, it was very competitive to find work. I think it still is today. Italy's quite a destination that people like to go to. And I couldn't find a job in Venice. So I thought, well, I'll go to Spain. It's Mediterranean. So I went back to... Well, I didn't go back to Venice. I went to a really horrible town near Milan. I have a bit of a record of ending up in quite grim places. And then I split up with the boyfriend because of various issues. But I spent a year there. And then after that, actually the situation in Italy, a lot of places, a lot of language academies, there was corruption and a lot of them went bankrupt. So I had a job to...
What year was that?
It was probably 93, 94. Mm-hmm. So many people ended up without a job because myself and friends that worked at the same place had a job to go to, which got pulled at the last minute. And so there I was again at my parents' without a job in October when all the hiring had already taken place, which then resulted in me having to think, because I thought, okay, where do I want to go? Europe, but where all the Spain jobs, the Italy jobs had gone.
Did it cross your mind to look for a job in the UK, in an academy teaching?
No. You wanted... I was still very much of the feeling that I wanted to travel. I wasn't ready to go back to the UK. So a job came up in, I think I was interviewed for Poland, but the description really put me off because it was basically like, this is a coal mining town, you need to bring with you because the temperatures are can be minus 25 in winter. It just sounded really bad. But at the same time, I got contacted. I think I'd sent a CV on spec to a place sort of affiliated to International House, and they contacted me for a job in the Czech Republic, and it was a promotion because it was to be an assistant director. And I was a bit like, oof. I'd only got really 2 years of experience, but I had the good result on my CELTA. They said, okay, we'll give you the job on the condition you do the diploma in the same year. but it was a bit like being fast-tracked into a promotion.
Wow, that was a very good opportunity.
Yeah, plus they were paying for the diploma as well. And I thought, Czech Republic? I'd always thought the idea of Prague quite interested me, but again, I didn't end up working in Prague. I ended up in the south in Brno, which is the second city, which I wouldn't say was a... I said I ended up in grim places. I actually really liked it. But if you speak to someone Czech, they're like, ooh, not Prague.
Not Newcastle.
Exactly. So I was like, okay, no. But it was a fantastic experience because I was very, very quickly learning a lot of new things. It was quite stressful. Mm-hmm. I was quite worried initially that people wouldn't respect me because I didn't have on paper that much experience.
And what did you do after Prague? After
Brno, I stayed there for 2-3 years and I really, really enjoyed it. But the problem was always the same thing, that living there I had a very good standard of living, but to come back to the UK I had no money because I was earning Czech crowns, so mm-hmm. in that sense it was quite difficult. So after those 3 years I decided to come back to the UK. I got offered a job in a university in Scotland in St Andrews.
Oh, lovely.
And so, again, it was a big jump because it was a university job. And I couldn't quite believe it because it had, you know, like so many things that, you know, your name on the door, business cards, you know.
Your own office.
Yeah, opportunities. And I was relatively young. I suppose I was like 26 by that point. But I had a kind of arrogance bit of youth, I think, because I was a bit like, oh, okay, so 2 years there. Right, I'm bored of this. It's a small town in Scotland. I want to do my master's. The sky's the limit. Doesn't matter. So I don't think I really valued the job that I had. But I think I was too young because it was quite a small town. And I felt it quite claustrophobic. I had the feeling that I wanted to do a master's. I thought that was going to open all these doors for
me. Is that what you did? Did you leave St.
Andrews? Well, I left to do a master's, yeah.
And where did you do that?
Lancaster.
Lancaster.
Yeah. I always wanted to do there because when I'd been in the Czech Republic, I had a friend who'd gone on to do it. And it was at the time, I think it still is, it's very well thought of for linguistics.
A master's in linguistics?
Yeah, yeah. It was a fantastic experience to go back to being a student. Very, very different experience. Because, you know, when you're paying for something, when you're a more mature student, you take it that much more seriously. Whereas when I'd been at Newcastle, I was floating about. Mm-hmm. Reading books, sitting, you know, not really, really thinking about what I was studying, but I think when I was there, I was, yeah. Okay.
And how did you, because then you went to Liverpool, didn't you, after that? Did you go to Liverpool University after?
After Lancaster, I had a few different things that I did. I went to Warwick University and I did it taught on a pre-sessional, mm-hmm. which was my first experience of doing that. Teaching overseas students for academic purposes, and I got quite interested in that. Mm-hmm. Briefly went to London, which actually I didn't like that much. I think being so much from the north of England, and I actually realised that I'd lived in quite small places.
Yeah, London could be quite cold.
I found it, even though I'd lived abroad, and even though I'd lived in places quite far away, I found London, mm-hmm. at that point in my life, I
didn't like it.
No. So, yeah, I ended up back in Liverpool. And I gradually picked up work there in the university, doing teacher training. At one point I was working in all three universities because I was basically hourly paid in different places, moving between the three.
And was that purely teaching in Liverpool?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think because of the kind of uncertainty of the job situation, it was quite difficult to get a permanent contract. You had to diversify, you had to do other things. So I did in terms of teacher training. I got opportunities. I'd already done that in St Andrews. I'd done it a bit in the Czech Republic. So I became a CELTA trainer. I had to run courses for continuing education courses for native speakers. That was things like about grammar, quite weird and different things, and sociolinguistic things that had come from my master's, really.
What actually brought you to Spain? How did you arrive here?
Meeting my husband.
Did that happen in Liverpool?
No, because I was very, very busy. I went to Malaga on holiday. I was en route to a yoga holiday, and I met my husband and as a holiday romance in Malaga prior to the yoga holiday.
And is Pablo from Malaga?
No, he's from Granada, but he was working in Malaga. And so he actually moved to Liverpool, to be honest, and he lived with me for 4 years in Liverpool. But being Mediterranean after those 4 years...
Didn't like the rain.
For someone from Andalusia, it's not exactly... I would say that he looks on those years with a lot. Now he looks back and I think probably he would say that he really, really enjoyed those years. But I think the climate factor...
Got him down.
So, plus, you know, other things happened and I think I was ready for a change. I'd been back in Liverpool for 10 years and I thought, well, why not? The one thing that I said to him was, if we go abroad, it has to be really somewhere there's a British council, because I knew that if I'd already worked in academies that didn't pay much money, and I wasn't really prepared to go down.
You didn't want to go backwards?
No. I felt initially that I was.
Did you come straight to Valencia or did you try another city first?
No, we tried other places. We had in our head, because we kind of ruled out the south of Spain because there was no work and there were no British councils. Even though I think perhaps we would have thought about it, but I don't think also that Pablo wanted to be so close to perhaps his family initially. But we looked at Mallorca, and the two choices we had were Mallorca or Valencia. Mm-hmm. Mallorca because we really liked it, but then we realised when we went and we started to look around that it was an island and that might be complicated in terms of travel and coming back to see family and things like that. And also, I don't know, it is quite a small island, it's quite expensive. Mm-hmm. We were looking at Palma and it's expensive. And Valencia, we just thought Valencia was a bit of a compromise because it's a big enough city. My husband had connections here because his family are originally from here. We thought that for both of us there would be more opportunities.
So that was, what, six years ago?
4 years ago.
4 years ago.
But I think, again, we didn't really think at the time, we didn't realise, I think, that the recession was hitting.
Yeah, you came more or less at the beginning, when the recession kicked off.
We arrived and people said to us, if you'd come a year earlier, it would have been easier because... But then probably, I suppose, I think we were a bit naive. I don't think we realised, because the situation in the UK wasn't that bad, I don't think we realised what it was in other countries. So right. We came with very, like, hopeful expectations, and I'm not entirely sure whether we were completely sure of the situation here.
So what's been the most difficult thing in these last 4 years, adjusting to life here?
I think, at times finding work, financially, sometimes it's difficult because I think both of us had jobs in the UK and a regular salary that was coming in, whereas here it's sometimes fluctuated. The language, for me, I mean, one issue is that the language of our relationship has always been in English. Mm-hmm. And it's quite difficult to change that, but if you want to progress, then you need to force that issue to speak more Spanish.
And even if you do change it, my experience is, although my partner understands me, we do speak a kind of a Spanglish,
yes.
So when I speak to somebody else, they don't understand me.
Exactly.
Because I'm making mistakes.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So I have the feeling that after 4 years I should be fluent in Spanish, and I certainly can communicate in Spanish quite well. But very inaccurately, I feel.
Mm. I think that's pretty much where I am too. And what's the best thing about being a teacher?
Being a teacher.
What do you enjoy most?
I don't know. I think I'm quite a people person. I like working with people, and I think it's rewarding as well. You know, because you can see students who are less confident becoming more confident, and if you feel that you've been a part of that, if you've got exam classes that you get them through the exam. As a teacher, a trainer, I mean, that is incredibly rewarding because, again, you know, you see people very, very, as I was, uncertain and nervous about teaching, and then you see them, how they improve. So, yeah, I think it's, if you like people and you like to see progress and you feel that, and I think if you genuinely, if you see that they think you've done a good job, I found students here have been incredibly generous at the end of courses, giving me amazing presents that I haven't had in other places. even with very rich students from Saudi Arabia in the UK, here I'm very touched by some of the
presents. I think they do appreciate what we do.
I mean, presents like, and you know, to go away for a weekend, you know, gift experiences that you sort of kind of find that it's not about presents, but you think, wow.
You appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. Which in
what's the worst thing?
The workload.
You had a very busy year last year.
Yeah, I think that I haven't, and I still don't feel I've found a work-life balance here. I think I'm juggling lots of plates in the air constantly, and even if I try to scale it back, which I have done this year, I still seem to be chasing my tail, constantly chasing my tail.
I sympathise. I find it very hard to say no
That's
sometimes.
It.
Sometimes because you have to.
I think also because it's not, I know that I'm hourly paid at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
I haven't got enough, and therefore, you can't say no. Examining comes up, you say, okay, I need a bit of extra money, I do examining on top of the normal stuff.
Yeah. What advice do you have for Spanish speakers who are trying to learn English?
I think don't be afraid. I think sometimes Spanish speakers say, oh, my English is really bad. And then I think about the average English person trying to speak a language. Pablo used to have very often in the pub, people say, oh, I speak Spanish. And they could just say, like, I want a beer. That's it, an appalling pronunciation.
I can say that in about eight languages.
Yeah. And then I think when these people are feeling so bad about their English, and I think, yeah, but actually, you know, you can communicate. You've got a very low self-esteem about your English. So I think that actually realising and creating an environment, I think that you just have to have a go. I mean, I know that for myself too, that initially in the first year that I was here, I was very scared to speak Spanish because I thought people wouldn't understand me. But then you realise actually that if you don't try, you're not going to progress.
Mm-hmm. It's very much a confidence thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if even if it's going to exchanges in some of the pubs locally, and actually seeing it as a fun experience, if they don't understand you, it's not the end of the world. You can laugh about it. And normally, by the misunderstanding, you find the understanding.
Yes.
You know,
if you're making the effort, then people recognise it.
I mean, I know that from Spanish as well, that sometimes I don't know the word. I have to go round the houses to say what I want to say. But I get there in the end. And I think that that's the same for our students, that they have to overcome that fear of maybe looking a bit stupid or feeling that they're going to look stupid. Just have a go.
You can't improve if you don't make mistakes.
Because also, yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly.
What do you do with your free time when you have free time and when you're not teaching? Do you have any hobbies?
I really like cycling. Go cycle where we live. The countryside is just behind with lots of fields. That's really relaxing. Mm-hmm. I read a lot. Well, I read a lot when I have time to read. If I'm not so busy at work, I can get through a book very, very quickly.
What do you read? Fiction?
Yeah.
Biographies?
Fiction, novels. I'm not snobby about what I read. If people give me something, I read it. It doesn't matter if it's a book club book or if it's something heavier, I'll read it. So I like reading a lot. I don't know what else. I used to do yoga in the UK, but I don't do that here. I'd like to do that again. I think it would be good for me. Mm-hmm. And other things, cinema, go to the cinema. Less than we did in the UK because of the working hours, but
sure.
I enjoy movies as well.
Can you talk a little bit about what you'd like to do in the future?
Oof.
Do you see your future here, or do you think you'd move on somewhere?
I don't know. To be honest, I'm always open. I wouldn't say I see myself here forever. I think maybe because of the movement that I've had in my life, moving doesn't really scare me.
Mm-hmm.
But equally, we invested quite a lot of money in moving to Spain, and to move back to England would actually be quite expensive, and I kind of think you have to move forward.
It doesn't scare me, but I notice as the years are passing, I'm less inclined, and I've got less... I don't feel like I want to change, keep changing, keep packing up.
I think it's much more complicated, because if you have your bag, just a couple of suitcases, you can move very easily. But here, whether we wanted to or not, we've bought furniture, we've got cats.
Yeah.
I think psychologically you're right. it's more complicated.
And I haven't got children. I'm not thinking about the children's school or anything. So it would be fairly simple for us to move countries or even cities. Yeah. And I just don't feel like it anymore.
No, I know what you mean. I think there is a... Although equally, I think if an opportunity presented itself that I thought was...
Career-wise?
For either myself or my husband, I would move if I thought it would be a good thing. I'm quite restless. I think after... I feel after 4 years, what's next? And I don't know whether that's... I think it's partly a culture from the UK, because I think there's much more movement of jobs in the UK.
Have you ever thought of opening your own language academy?
Yeah. I've talked about it. Because
that might be a challenge that would...
But I have the feeling it would be a lot of hard work. I read something on the internet that said something like, in terms... It was somebody who'd set one up, and it was a very honest description, and said, be prepared to work like you've never worked before in your life, and the problems of employing people. I also think in Spain, compared to the UK, the logistics of setting up a business are much more complicated in terms of paperwork. I think in the UK you can get something started quite quickly.
More government help as well.
Yeah.
And you don't get so much help over here.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move into the quick fire hot seat, which is something I'm experimenting with you for the first time. So a series of very quick questions, fired one after the other, and just tell me what you think.
Okay.
So, what makes you happy?
Holidays.
What makes you sad?
Working too much.
This is one that I didn't send to you by email, but I'm going to ask it anyway, so you haven't seen this before. What one thing, if you were to tell someone about yourself, would they find it difficult to believe?
That I was arrested.
Really? What for?
For going through a traffic light.
In Spain or in the UK? In Liverpool.
Yes. And then the...
A red light?
Yes. Not into oncoming traffic. It was like a staggered traffic lights. And,
did they take you to the police station?
Yes, they did. They basically, because they said it was a Friday, and they said, have you had a drink? I hadn't, but I was quite honest. I'm a bit stupid in these situations. So I said, this much. And they probably thought, this much is that much. And so I was so stressed, I think, that when they tried to breathalyze me, I couldn't give the sample. So then they didn't need to arrest me, but they arrested me. They said, okay, once, twice, okay, third time you don't do this, you're being arrested.
But didn't they then breathalyze you again at the station?
They did. But
you were okay.
Not until they had, like, completely listed the contents of my bag, taken my fingerprints, taken my photo. It was the most...
But they didn't charge you?
No. Because
so
as soon as they tested me, they were like, oh, it's zero. What a silly... But it was 4 hours of police time.
I had similar experience, and I was very, very lucky. Working in Worcester, I went out, and I was over the limit. I had drunk too much, and I took the car, and I was stopped, and I was breathalyzed, and I was over the limit. But for some reason, they had to confirm that with a breathalyzer that they had at the station. So they took me to the station.
And by that time...
By the time they processed me, and they put me in a cell for an hour... By the time they actually gave me that second breathalyzer, I was fine. I was so lucky.
Yeah.
Stupid thing to do. I was very young and stupid.
Yeah. I think it really shows you, actually, something like that, that it doesn't matter what your background is, what you've done, you're all treated the same until you're found not guilty.
Yeah, precisely. Which famous person, dead or alive, would you like to have dinner with?
Oof. Oh dear, I don't know about that. That's an interesting question.
Or have a drink with.
Oh, somebody like really, rock and roll person that would behave quite badly. My husband likes Keith Richards. I think he would be quite entertaining. Because, he's a guy who likes to party. I think he'd be a loose cannon.
And he'd have some stories.
Oh yeah.
Wouldn't he?
He'd make you laugh. Yeah.
In an ideal world, what would your life be like?
I don't think I would ever be the sort of person that would like to stop working, because I think that I enjoy my job, but I would like to have a better work-life balance. So more, I think, working part-time and having the sufficient money to not have to work more hours would be great.
So, have the freedom to accept or decline work.
Yes.
Because you have that financial stability.
Yeah, definitely.
If you could change something about your character, what would you change?
because I didn't worry so much. I've always been a worrier.
Marie said that. She said she's a terrible worrier.
Terrible worrier. I think it's a, if you are a worrier, it's horrible.
But do you worry about everything or things kind of work related?
Yes, constantly worry. Constantly. I think also, I mean, maybe I'm too responsible. I don't know. I think this year, or because I was doing the senior teacher thing last year, I've realised I'm spending more time preparing my lessons. And I'm thinking, why am I spending so much time doing this? It's like a bid to be perfectionist about things, perhaps. But
that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, but I think it can eat your time. You don't need to. You realise that if you've got 20 minutes to plan a lesson, probably the quality of that lesson may even be better than the lesson that you spent.
I've had that happen.
2 hours preparing something.
I've had that happen. Yeah.
I think sometimes you produce when you over-prepare and you do things and you worry about what you're doing, then the lesson is not. Whereas if you prepare something very quickly.
But I've got this fear of walking into a lesson and being
unprepared.
Maybe caught out or being unprepared or not having enough material.
Of course. Yeah, me too.
I'd rather over-prepare and not use things and not use material than under-prepare and have like a half an hour empty hole at the end of the lesson.
Me too. I worry also about what people think, which is a really bad
thing. So am I, and I'm working on that. And I read a lot of self-help books. I listen to productivity podcasts, and I'm really into this kind of this idea. And I'm trying not to worry, which is trying to change a habit of a lifetime, not to worry what people think of me.
No,
just
I think
to be true to yourself, find out who you are.
Yeah.
And if people don't like it, it's basically their problem.
It's true.
But that's very difficult for me to do.
It is quite difficult, I'm the same, totally.
What's your biggest guilty pleasure?
Buying priority boarding on Ryanair.
Really?
Yes. I don't like Ryanair. But in terms of getting to the UK, it's the quickest and the cheapest way to go. But I cannot stand the nightmare of the queue for Ryanair. It's horrible. I would pay that priority boarding and be at that front of the queue, stroll onto the plane, put my bag, without that stress. But I resent it at the same time. I think, why am I paying this extra money to Ryanair? But every time I don't do it, I think, oh, I just should have done the priority boarding.
Do you go back often?
No, not that often. I mean, I'd say definitely twice a year.
Because you have family in Liverpool?
Yeah, and my dad now, he's 80, so I think that I should spend time with him because you don't know how long, 80's a good age now. So yeah, twice, three times a year, something like that. Yeah.
And finally, if you had €6,000 to spend on yourself, what would you buy?
Ooh, €6,000. I think I'd probably buy a car. Because, there's lots of things I'd do if I had money. But I think a car, having a small car, would be great. Because we have a car, but it's not my car, it's my husband's car. And it worked in reverse in the UK as well. When we were there, he didn't like to drive my car because it was my car. And he was worried about having an accident. Even stronger for me because he has a very big car. And I've always had small cars. And I love driving in the UK. I was always in my car. And here, I don't drive very much.
Do you drive to work?
No, I don't. He will drop me off and I'll get the metro back. But if I drive, it tends to be locally on quieter roads. The thought of driving in the city scares me here in Spain.
Because of the Valencian drivers?
I think they're quite mad drivers.
I
drove in Italy, and I think, again, that's something of, I was told that I had to drive to a company near Milan, and I have to say it was a really white-knuckle experience. It was a really scary experience. But because I was young, I did it without even thinking. It was like, okay. And here, I think they're actually on a par with Italian drivers. I see really bad driving.
And I
also see a lot of young people on scooters. And that scares me because I think, okay, if I'm hesitating as an English-style driver, imagine if I hit one of those young people or something like that. And that I don't want to even think about that.
And funnily enough, I really noticed the difference just going down to visit my parents in Moraida, because there are a lot of German and English residents there.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to drive on the roads.
Yeah, because people are considerate.
They're considerate. They think before they get to a roundabout way they're going to exit it.
Yeah, and they indicate that they are.
They indicate? They let you out?
Yeah. No.
Not here.
No. Just can't. So, but I recognise that I have to, I need to kind of, I think my quality of life would be better if I drove. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Because I think I would save time and I'd probably feel more independent as well, mm-hmm. things like that. I think it's, plus it was something when I learned to drive before my brothers. It was the one thing that I did before them, because my mum really pushed me to learn to drive because she never did. And it seems a real pity to have been able
not to take advantage of that
when I've been driving all my life. So that's the thing. So.
Anna, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Fantastic.
We hope you enjoyed that interview with Anna, and thank you very much for listening. Please help us by writing a comment on iTunes so that more people can find our podcasts. And you can also write a comment or a question about this interview on our Facebook page at facebook.com/mentionenglese or on our website at inglespodcast.com, or send us a tweet on Twitter at @mentiontwit. Bye for now. The music in this podcast is by Jay Lang. The album is called Drops of H2O, and the track is The Filtered Water Treatment. The music is licensed under Creative Commons license by 3.0 from ccmixter.org.